going to be talking about my research on the seasonal reproductive development of Halyomorpha halus, which is an invasive species. It's originally native to Asia and has been introduced into Allentown, Pennsylvania around 1996, and it has since spread throughout the Northeast and the Mid-Atlantic states. It is a pest of tree fruit and soybeans in its native countries, and some preliminary research here in the in Pennsylvania and New Jersey shows that it will also be a pest over here as well. Some of the literature states that Halyomorpha can have up to 5 or 6 generations per year in China, and while we acknowledge that that's not happening in Allentown, Pennsylvania, some preliminary field sampling was inconclusive as to whether or not it had 1 or 2 generations per year. So we hypothesized that Halyomorpha was bivoltine in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And to answer this hypothesis, we identified 3 different objectives. The first was to look at the seasonal dynamics of the adults and the nymphs on ornamentals. And then the second was to look at the seasonal reproductive physiology of the females, both in the laboratory and from field collected specimens. And then finally, I wanted to relate these two, looking at how the seasonal dynamics of Halyomorpha relates to ovarian development. The methodology used was beet sampling on ornamentals. This was done weekly from 2005 to 2007 at Rodale Organic Tree Farm in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And then in the laboratory, to look at the ovarian development, we devised a ranking system based on laboratory-reared females of known ages, and then we field-collected samples in 2007 and assigned them to these ovarian ranking systems. And then I also recorded the body mass and the spermatheca width and length. And this is a methodology that is similar to that used by Kiritani, Cullum and Zalem, and Hummel et al. Halyomorpha overwinters as an adult, and so the females that you see, where's my cursor? Oh, here it is. The females that, the first females that you see here are emerging from diapause, and we start to collect females in April and May. And then there's an apparent peak here in mid-June, and then obviously a much larger peak here in mid-August and September, which we believe is the first generation adults. A similar relationship was seen with the nymphal population. We see these two peaks here, right here and right here, in mid-June and then again in August, which led us to wonder if there were 2 generations per year. This large peak that we saw here in 2007 was due to a large number of first instars that were found. The first instars aggregate around the egg mass, and so they're really easy to see. So when I looked at the seasonal dynamics of the first and second instars, which indicate a recent oviposition event, and correlated that with the black light data, which indicates the flight activity of the females, we can see that we see the first instars, and then we see the first generation adults. And when we overlay degree day data from that, this is the first female that was found in 2007, and they require 148 degree days in order to develop their ovaries before they start oviposition. And so at this point here, at 148 degree days, we can start to see first and second instars as expected. And then from that point at in early June, they require an additional 538 degree days to complete development from egg to adult. And that lines up very nicely with this large peak that we see in the black light data from the females. So we suspect that this large peak here in August is due to the first generation females. But there are also some other smaller peaks here. So it could have been that we did not find the first female. And again, the field data was inconclusive as to the number of generations per year. So the second objective was to look at the seasonal reproductive development. And this was accomplished in 2 ways. We, in the laboratory, we developed a ranking system. And then I collected females in 2007 and dissected them and assigned them to these 3 different variables, the first of which was the reproductive ovarian rank. And these are drawings that were done from Halyomorpha specimens. These are obviously the ovaries, and each ovary contains 7 ovarioles. This is the lateral oviduct, the common oviduct, and the spermatheca. I assigned 6 different ranks Rank 0 contained no developed oocytes. Rank 1 contained at least one immature oocyte per ovarial. And rank 2 contained more than one immature oocyte per ovarial. And the numbers here in parentheses are the numbers of field-collected specimens that were assigned to each ranking. The remaining ranks were the vitellogenic stages, which means that they were actually producing mature oocytes. In rank 3 here, rank 3 has the females have at least one mature oocyte per ovarial. Rank 4 is very similar, except that they also contain one mature oocyte in the lateral oviduct, which indicates that they're very close to ovipositioning. Rank 5 were the post-vitellogenic females. These females are at the end of their reproductive life. The ovaries are distended, and the corpus luteum is usually present. So when I looked at the field-collected females and assigned them to the different ovarian ranks, this is the results for the seasonal development. And as you can see here in May, a lot of the females are in rank 1 and 2, which are the pre-vitellogenic stages. So these are the females that are coming out of diapause. And then we start to see vitellogenic females, or stages 3 and 4, beginning in June through August. We also start to see, in August, we start to see pre-vitellogenic females in stages 0 and 1, and we believe that these are the females that are then going into diapause. So these would be the first-generation females that we see beginning here in August, continuing on into October and November. And then we start to see the stage 5 females here in July and August, and these would be the overwintering females that are dying off. So this actually disproves the hypothesis that there was two generations per year, because if there were two generations per year, we would expect to start to see pre-vitellogenic females most likely in July, and we did not see this. The second variable that I used in addition to ovarian rank was body mass. Previous work I had done when I was collecting the females, I noticed that there was a lot of variation in the weight of the females throughout the season. So I thought this might be an indicator of ovarian development, and it shows, we can see that there's a very strong linear relationship here between ovarian rank and body mass. And this indicates, one, that our ranking system is a good one, and two, that body mass is a good character to use when looking at ovarian development. And this is when stage 5 is excluded, because we would not expect stage 5 females to be gaining weight as they are at the end of their reproductive life and have used up all of their fat bodies and have no eggs. The third variable that I used was the spermatheca width. And this was an indication of mated status. So this picture here shows an unmated spermatheca. The spermatheca on these guys is actually very large and very easy to see, which was nice for all the dissections. It's colorless and it's very narrow, whereas a mated spermatheca is quite large. It is distended and is different color due to the spermatozoa inside. So I took spermatheca length and width measurements, as indicated here, and then I also did a visual assessment of mated status. And this was based on the size and the color of the spermatheca. And that was three different categories: unmated, mated, and there was an indeterminate stage where the spermatheca was larger, but it wasn't really, you could not see any spermatozoa inside. And I actually did some dissections of the spermatheca and staining for sperm, and we did not find any sperm in those indeterminate stages. But what's nice about this is that the visual assessment of mated status lines up nicely with the spermatheca width. So we can see that there is a significant difference in the spermatheca width between the different mated classes. So all three of our variables that we used, the body mass, the ovarian rank, and spermatheca size, were good variables to use to measure ovarian development of the females. When we look at what stage the females are mating, dependent upon their ovarian rank, we can see that they do start mating as early as rank 1. And rank 1, if you remember, was where they had one immature oocyte per ovarial. So there's very little reproductive development that's occurred, but there's a small percentage of females that are mated here. And then when we get to ranks 2, 3, and 4, which show a greater degree of ovarian development, we can see that at least 80% of those females are mated. When we look at the relationship between vitellogenic females and nymphs, what we can see is it lines up very nicely. We have the vitellogenic females appearing right before the first and second instars, and then something surprising that shows up here is this second peak here in August, and that also is the same time that our first-generation females show up. And when we look at the degree day data, what we can see here is that that large peak is the first-generation adults, and for some reason, the first-generation adults, at least a portion of them, are maturing their ovaries, but there's not enough degree days for their offspring to develop and create a second generation. We do see mating and reproduction occurring, mating and first instars in August and September, but again, there's not enough degree days for that. So Halymorpha is univoltine. We do see a large first peak in the generation in August, and sampling and degree day data show that there's one generation per year. And when we look at the host phenology over top of this, we can see that those overwintering females are present on ornamentals and tree fruit, and then that large first generation peak, the females that are moving to Polonia, which is one of their main host plants, and soybean. So although some of the first generation females are maturing their ovaries and becoming vitellogenic, they do not produce a second surviving generation, and Halymorpha is still univoltine. I'd like to thank the following people, and thank you.